7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy, and Kia's open season. It's on now with match-winning deals. Now, Jimmy Bartella's with us, and we'd love to take your calls. You can join us on the Harcourt's open line. 13 1332 is the number for all things real estate. Speak to Harcourt's. Now, Jimmy, I'm looking forward to chatting to your captain up at the Giants, Stephen Cornelio. He was himself one of the big stories of season 2020. He's an outstanding young man. He's a good leader. He's hit a hurdle, and having a very much looking forward to having a chat to him. But we begin tonight, Jimmy, with a look at the news of the day, and it's quite interesting because it revolves around the Australian Open again. And this time it revolves around comments that Daniel Andrews said today at a press conference that one of the main reasons that we are going ahead with the Open, or words to that effect, is that we may lose it if we don't. And I think basically clearly feeling the heat of a less than convinced public. I can tell you exactly what he said. And I quote, "The jobs, the economic boost, the fact that if we lose it, we may never get it back. This event is very important to our city and our state, and it is worth going to these unprecedented measures to be sure it goes ahead." The other issue, of course, is that Tennis Sandgren is flying to Australia as we speak, despite testing positive a second time for COVID. So I think all of these issues are starting to apply some serious heat to Tennis Australia, and in particular the government that has ticked off on the event. To be fair, I haven't got as big an issue with Tennis Sandgren as others, and there's plenty of negative feedback. Lisa Neville, Victorian MP, she issued a statement today saying that the positive result is one where it's basically just viral shedding, and he has got permission from all those in the medical departments to fly. How do you see it?
I completely understand people's angst and anger towards it, because you got to remember it was the Victorian government's bumbling of the last COVID outbreak, and there's still people reeling and trying to recover their livelihoods, jobs, businesses, you name it, as well as mental well-being, health. Yet this guy is, you know, shedding or whatever, it still reads too positive. Mm. And it looks double standard, and it looks tone deaf. Now, he might have all the tick of approval, but probably for, to use that word again, the optics, you just say to Mr. Tennis Sandgren, "Sorry, mate, you just can't come this time." Like, we've just dealt with a six-month lockdown,
yep,
one of the harshest in the world. It'd look like we're currying favour for you above our 6.5 million citizens who only recently, a couple of weeks ago, we closed the border at a click of our fingers because of a couple of outbreaks in another state. I just think it comes across as a little bit tone deaf. But from my point of view, like, I understand he's been cleared and all that sort of stuff, but you've got to also imagine the people in Victoria.
I can imagine the people outside of Victoria still trying to get into the
exactly
state. I mean, they're the ones that would be absolutely
livid,
fuming at this stage. And it's a major issue that the government, I think, is taking serious heed of. Conor McKenna, he was, in fact, he shut down the season, or Melbourne and Essendon season, for 7 days.
They were baying for his blood.
They were. And in reality, I think, given no one could actually trace where he was picked up the virus from, they believed, I think, ultimately, that he was virus shedding after having picked it up in Europe, getting a negative test there and testing positive. 13 1332 is a number. Your thoughts on these contentious issues? Just on, though, the Premier saying that we may lose it. It didn't really resonate with me, even though for a long period of time, I must admit that, you know, I thought that China was, yep, chasing it. China don't want anything from us, from cherries to lobster at this stage, but you rest assured they'd like our tennis tournament. We spoke to a good friend of this program, Peter Johnson, earlier in the afternoon, and I started by asking him about Dan Andrews' comments today and whether or not we could ever lose the Australian Open to a city overseas.
Well, Gerald, I know for sure that the Australian Open as a business has to do what it has to do to keep the continuity and keep going ahead. I'm sure that's the reason they're pressed on. But they don't actually, it's sort of, the way it works is it's an asset owned by Tennis Australia. So it'd be really Tennis Australia's to lose as such. Like, they could sell it to, wherever, you know, there's a lot of countries would love to have the Grand Slam event, but it's really not something that gets taken away from you by any governing body. I mean, the Grand Slams are a sort of an alliance of the four, you know, the French, Wimbledon and US Open, but they're independent entities that are owned. And, you know, I like, say, for example, Wimbledon wasn't played last year, but it didn't mean that Wimbledon was lost.
Yeah.
They just sat off and they're back on. So I think that's sort of not really correct. It's really in Tennis Australia's hands to decide the status of the Australian Open. Now,
So there you have it. And we do appreciate Peter Johnson's thoughts. And if you'd like to hear the full interview, you can pick it up on our podcast. But quite clearly, what the Premier's saying is not correct. If we, like Wimbledon, if that didn't go ahead, they haven't lost it. So he's either been fed the wrong information on this one.
Yeah, it's good clarity. I think where maybe the confusion come from, it'd be like a governing body deciding where the tournaments go.
Yep.
But the way I understood it is, no, Wimbledon, US, French and Australian are actually owned by individual entities and you come and play for their tournament. It's not like the ATP owns all four of them. So those four like individuals are part of, like, the ATP players can play for them.
13-13-32 is the Harcourts Open line. Do you think we should be going ahead with the Australian Open or not? And continue to monitor the Herald Sun's examination of this particular issue. And on their feedback line, it's running still at about 30% for and 70% against. Bill's from Chelsea Heights. He'd like to make a comment. If you'd like to join Bill, 13-13-32 is the Harcourts Open line. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Yes. It wouldn't be because he's getting pressure for votes for it.
Say again?
Like over letting him in. It wouldn't be because Andrews is getting pressured for votes for this tennis player to come in the country.
Well, I wouldn't have thought he's under pressure for votes to let Tennis Sengren in. I mean, to me...
Oh, the Australian Open, to make the Australian Open go ahead, because it's very Melbourne, Victorian, central.
Indeed, but Tennis Sengren...
He shouldn't be coming. Hey.
Tennis Sengren is not pivotal to the tournament. He's not Roger Federer, and Roger's not coming. We're still running with this thing. But what I think is interesting is the fact that in the minds of the Premier, he believes that there's a potential for us to lose it down the track. Now, talking to Peter Johnson at length today, the reality is if we keep up the status of it by way of payments to players, there's no way known that we can lose it. It's Tennis Australia's property.
But it's pretty much Tennis Australia will make the decision whether it leaves.
So it will be interesting to follow this because it's not going away and it's only going to take one calamity of sorts, a positive test or a trainer to be seen at a pub or at a disco when he shouldn't be, or heaven help us, for a player to break ranks. And this thing could turn very messy. But at this stage, we're heading into the Australian Open. The good news is, of course, the Bernard Tomic is going to be part of the main draw.
Bernard, he's back.
He is back, Bernard. He picked up the title over in Doha, so he's got himself at least $100,000. His bank manager will be happy. We look for the trusted Australian logo. It's to be sure it's authentically Australian. That's the logo you look forward to. Stephen Cornelio, captain of the Giants, talks to the most influential board member after this. Welcome back to Sports Day, where it's Kia's open season. It's on now with match-winning deals and Red Energy. Jimmy, we're going to have to go back to this issue of the Australian Open and what the Premier said today, because before we go to Steve Cornelio, just to put on the record, he said that other countries would have pounced on the billion-dollar tournament, with Melbourne risking losing hosting rights altogether. And that would have been a massive blow, financial blow to the economy, which we'd all agree with. But he used Japan as an example, with their Olympic tennis complex in Tokyo ready and waiting after the delay of the 2020 Games. But, I mean, I suspect that doesn't fly at the present time, because they're in a much worse situation than most countries at this stage. And the Olympics itself doesn't look like going ahead. He does say again that if the Australian does not happen in Melbourne, it'll happen somewhere else. It will happen in Japan. It will happen in China. It will happen in Singapore. The real risk is then it doesn't come back. Anyway, we'll come back to that, because we've got one of the leaders of the competition joining us on the line. Steve Cornelio, the Giants captain, is with us, and it's welcome to 2021, Steve, and thanks for your time tonight in the program.
No, thanks, guys. Appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
Do you reckon we should be having the Australian Open, given the set of circumstances?
I'm not too sure. But in terms of how fondly I watch it, I can't say. I do watch it at the Oz Open, of course, and like to attend it, but in terms of the politics of it, I'm not too sure.
Well, your AFLW team has had to keep shifting bases because of COVID. They're in Albury. Now they've had to quickly rush across to Adelaide.
Yeah, it's COVID really, isn't it? We've never really experienced this like in sport, across the world, really ever, where there's, hub type of situations. And unfortunately for the AFL, W girls who, it's tough for a lot of them for a number of reasons, not only personally, but, professionally with trying to balance, AFL and other work, it's certainly a tough time. So we're definitely sparing a thought for them as well.
Wherever I go, Stephen, I get big raps about you as a person, and we know what you do on the field. Tim Jepp, who's known you since you were a boy over in Western Australia, continually gives you a major rap. But you found yourself in a bit of a hole last year, a big hole. You were the focus of the whole competition for a period of time, which must have been difficult to deal with, and certainly puts a bit of a target on your head coming into 2021. How have you dealt with all of that?
Yeah, no doubt, Jared. It was a difficult year for myself, and one I probably haven't had in my career before. Of course, I've had some downs over the time, but last year, looking over my career, it was a really difficult time, and I've just been taking the last few months really just to reflect on what it is that got the better of our team and what got the better of me and how I can change that and come back a better player. And like I said, I've been fortunate enough over my career to have some really good ups and evolve as a player, and the type of player and more importantly the leader I want to be for our football club. I want guys to be able to see me rise from challenges like the ones of 2020 and be an example of how we can turn it around as a team and as a club.
So when you did your reflection, where did you feel you made an error? And were you at all bitter at all at various stages that you've dealt with about getting dropped? I mean, it must have been a year of great reflection, or post-season of great reflection, as to how you kickstart this season on a positive note.
Yeah, I think, for me, I was fortunate enough to be vice-captain for, a number of a number of years under Phil and Cal, and I don't know. I probably just tried to, think about, changing too many things. Spoke to someone, during the back end of the year as to, what you. I know it was different because of the hub situation, yep. Playing games, every 4 or 5 days, but, really getting your Monday to Wednesday, and then separating that from Thursday to Saturday in terms of, the conversations that need to be had with staff, or the time management piece, getting that out of the way earlier in the week, and really having that Thursday, Friday and Saturday to focus on, your what you bring to the team, your performance. And I was probably just thinking too many things. I think, Jared, it was, a few things that I had on my plate that I probably could have cut out of my schedule. So I think time management was a big one for sure. And I couldn't get a kick, which obviously, didn't help the on-field stuff. But, yeah, I think it was just a number of things, and they're probably the main ones.
Talking to a few people around the club, Cogs, they're all pretty excited about the opportunity and the potential of the forward group and forward of the ball. Jez Cameron leaves, but fit Toby Green this year. Jesse Hogan comes in looking to really reignite his career. The emergence of Riccardi. A lot of talent still in the front half.
Yeah, I think that's one of the the blessings of a couple of guys choosing to move on. There's a number of guys there that the competition's only probably just seen glimpses of, and Riccardi's probably one of those. Everyone's obviously seen how good Jesse can be when he's on, and we're definitely working really hard to make sure that he can physically and mentally perform for the Giants and get back to what he was doing best. It's just really exciting at the moment to see to see so many young guys actually, you know, see a path. I think, you know, for a long time, a lot of our younger players probably, you know, have either been drafted to the club and yes, they work hard and yes, they're getting better. But there's guys like Jeremy, Zach Williams in front of them, Aiden Corr in front of them, and now they actually can see a real path and have come in an attitude where, you know, they want to be the name getting, you know, caught out in that position come round one.
And a teammate of both of ours and now a coach, he was a bit of a mad scientist when I played with him, but he's in charge of a lot of that stuff in Steve Johnson now, back at the Giants as a coach.
Yeah, he is. I actually, you know, obviously I played with him for a number of years and I forgot his kicking ability and got one in the back of the head yesterday because he was doing a couple of those no-look kicks and a few terminologies. Changes that he's had already since he's been there, and there was one, I guess, Drew or play in particular called the J curve that wasn't a snap at all. It had nothing to do with a snap, which he thinks he created. So there's been a number of terminology had to, you know, been altered or changed to make sure Steve is happy with it.
Has he been focusing on ball movement? Because a lot of people when they watched the Giants last year thought, when you lost, it was the ball movement from the back half that cost you in some games. Has that been a big focus for him?
Yeah. I think that forward line will grow. You know, having someone like him with his expertise, I think also, you know, a ball movement and some of the ideas, I guess people that are fortunate enough to obviously know him and know how well he knows the game. I think, you know, obviously, he was a fantastic player, both skill-wise and what he achieved in the game. But as a coach and what he brings with his knowledge, ideas, but his hands-on approach, I think, is just one of the great assets that we've been able to access and get full-time this year. I think we, you know, definitely miss him around the organization, and we're fortunate to have him on board. And I know, a lot of guys, you know, grew up watching him play, and to be able to work with him and see how he, you know, interacts with players is just phenomenal.
I ran into Jesse Hogan. I used to go surfing with him a little bit in Paddington a couple of weeks before Christmas. He looks in a pretty good space, and he's a bit like, in some ways, the Giants themselves. A little bit unfulfilled. A lot of people have written him and you off, and yet get things right, and the dream still is there.
Yeah, I'm definitely unfulfilled, Jared, in terms of, we still get to win anything, really. And, you know, in terms of hunger and desire, especially after a year like 2020, both, you know, personally and collectively as a footy club, we're, you know, well, you know, capable of being right up there again this year. It's just about, you know, what we're going to do about it. And, you know, the work, obviously, has started for us a lot for the first and 4 years before Christmas, but you know, a really good feel about the place at the moment. But yeah, very much unfulfilled and you know, to be continued.
So, do you have much to do with Jesse as captain? I mean, clearly he is a pivotal part, even though, you know, a bit of a free hit. You got him for bugger all in reality, and he's a super talent. But do you have a bit of an extra handle on where he's at, given that he's had some issues, but he's so important for your future and the team's future?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was fortunate enough to Chris to spend a bit of time with him, do some training sessions with him and some conversations. I think we're, you know, very fortunate. Like you said, in fact, you can lose someone like Jeremy and gain someone like Jesse, with, you know, phenomenal talent and probably, like you were saying before, a little bit unfulfilled as to what he has left in the game and, you know, in conversations with him already. And, you know, guys like Toby and I know Shane Mumford in particular, you know, one of them, we're keeping him for the fact that we're loving it and we, you know, want him and need him to be a, you know, key part of it. You know, so far he's loving what, you know, Sydney can, you know, provide for him and provide for the player.
Just a couple ones on a lighter note before we let you go there as the reception starts to break up a bit. Hey, sure, we know he's a very entertaining bloke. You guys sort of did a bit of a video launching your 10-year anniversary jumper. He was the creative director on this little masterpiece.
Yeah, he's always thereabouts, and his affiliation with Puma, I think, has given him the green light to have a look at some of the designs for this piece. I think that the fans are going to love it. I think it's been a little bit the same with our jerseys in the last few years, but this one they're going to love. And I've had a sneak peek of the commercial. Obviously, Heath and he very funny, but what they're going to love the design and the jumper is going to be special. 10 years in our existence now, and we thought it was time to do something a little bit different.
What does a number one ticket holder at the Perth Glory get you?
Well, it gets you. It can't actually fight at a game in Perth, that's for sure. So I'll have to be waiting till they come over to Sydney. But as to what it holds just yet, we'll have to wait and see in a COVID season for the A League.
How good a player were you at the World Game?
If there's any teammates, Toby Green and Lockie Whitfield listening, it's they'll have a bit of a chuckle, but. I do very much, but not as hard as those two boys. We do play from time to time when we get the chance in the off season. My finishing capabilities aren't as strong as the Whitfields of the world.
Well, great to have you on board, and great to have you feeling happy and sounding happy. Anyway, Stephen, captain of the club. It's in a very high-profile position. You're under the pump, but you're back in the starting blocks like everybody else. Good luck for 2021, and hopefully we'll chat again.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Steve Canelio, he joined us there for the Australian-made. Australian-made logo, be sure. It's Aussie. This is Sports Day. Jimmy, one more comment from you before we go. Plenty more ahead for McDonald's. 7 new flavours of frozen Coke at Macca's are now available. Tell us in a 20 seconds what Canelio's like.
Ripping person, he can call it, up and down the ladder. First-year players, rookie players, to the CEO in Dave Matthews or Tony Shepherd, the chairman. Caring individual, works his backside off, and he'll bounce back.
Well, the focus will be on him without question. We're going to take a break. More after this. Time now to have a chat to Hilton Cartwright, Melbourne Stars all-rounder. And he needs to absolutely be at his best because there's a lot of good judges like you, Jimmy, who have written off the Stars. I know they're seventh on the ladder, but if they can pick up all the 4 points, they are still a genuine chance to play finals. Hilton, welcome to you. The pressure's on.
The pressure's right on, Jimmy. I'm surprised you've written us off, mate. We've made finals most years.
He's cooked you. He's just about jumped to the Renegades.
I have. He's thrown me under the bus there. He's thrown me under the bus there, Hilton. But the fact of the matter is you boys can generally make finals if you lock down some 4 points. 5 games left to go. How are you going to turn it around?
I think the way we've been progressing, although we haven't been getting the results, there's been a big shift in the way that we've been batting and the way we've been bowling. We've started to create a bit more consistency in the way we're doing our business. We're just waiting for that tide to turn, and I think we're getting really close. And being back at the G is it's obviously one of the best places in the world to play, and we know how to play there, so that's going to make a big part in being able to swing our momentum in the last 5 games.
Watching your games, you've had individuals absolutely go off. We've seen big knocks from Maxi. The Stoin up front has had big ones, but it feels like you can't get both sides of the game going at once, with the ball and bat.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think we've got, even one of the games we won, we didn't put a full performance in, but we still walked away with the chocolate. So I think that you're exactly right. It's being consistent throughout the whole game, not playing sort of half an innings here and half an innings there. We all know when we've fallen short, and as individuals know when they've done well. So I think it's your spot on there by just putting a full performance in, because when we do that, we know we're going to win games of cricket.
Is the answer to that throwing you the ball? We know you're an all-rounder. Yes. You got picked as a test player, a good bowler as well. Give Hilton Cartwright the ball.
Oh, mate, I'll relish in the opportunity. I'd love it again. But so far, my bowling hasn't been the best performance so far. So hopefully Maxi backs me in again with the ball. If I get to bowl the MCG, bigger boundaries will definitely suit me. But if he does throw me that ball, I'm going to be ready to go.
Played a couple of tests. What about your international ambitions going forward? Where do you see yourself at?
That's a tough question, because obviously I'm trying to play a lot of cricket, but not getting a whole heap of opportunity back in WA with such a strong side. Obviously, seeing Cameron Green relishing the opportunity and getting that that reward in the Aussie Test team. So I'm hoping to be able to crack back into that side. I played the last Shield game of our four-game block to really knuckle down that position and get that chance. It's been nice with the Stars to be able to play and get those opportunities. I've just got to cash in on those now and sort of set my spot in the side.
You're playing against the Strikers back at the MCG. Rashid Khan has been an absolute freak for the Strikers. Why is he so difficult? Is it the speed he bowls, his leg breaks? He just doesn't give you any opportunity?
I think it's a bit of everything. He bowls quick, so you've got to be right on him to be able to pick him. He's so hard to pick, and he knows how to bowl. He knows how to bowl to get wickets. He's not too tall, so the wickets are always in play. He attacks the wickets, and if you've got a guy who's a mystery spinner, whether you can spin it a lot or spin it a bit, you've always got that doubt as a batsman. And I think that's what makes him so crucial in 2020 game is he's hard to pick, he's quick, so you don't have a lot of time to think about it, and he's always attacking the wicket. So you know he's always in the game. And I mean, how many wickets did he take? He took about 17 wickets in the 8 games that he's played for him.
Yeah, he's been amazing as always. Does home ground advantage actually matter in T20?
I think it definitely does. Looking at the Scorchers, they've obviously been playing some really good cricket over in the West. The Strikers, I think they've won 3 of their 4 games at home so far this season. So I think we know how to play. We've got our pattern how to play at the G. And although you've still got to go out there and do it, you're a lot more confident going out there and doing it because you've had that experience. You've played more than the opposition there. So I definitely think it plays a massive factor in playing well.
Do you think that DRS should play some role in decisions in the Big Bash?
I do think it should play a role. How extreme that role is another question, and also comes down to a number of factors. But if we can get some sort of review system in play, I think that's going to be massive towards the game and getting the right results and the right decisions made.
Would you support a decision to play BBL on Christmas Day, as has been mooted?
That's a tough one to comment on, because I think for me it's easy to say yes. I don't have a huge amount of family commitments. Mm. I'm not a religious guy. So for me to sit here and say, you know, it's no dramas for me. I've got no real commitments on a day like that. I think that's a real question for the people who celebrate Christmas Day for what it is. And having kids around makes that just as tough as well. So I think that's it's a hard discussion to have with someone who doesn't have anything to really consider in their life.
Well, a pretty considered response, Hilton, and a very, very smart response indeed. Appreciate your time. Good luck. I was going to ask you about sledging. We've run out of time, and Jimmy just started that at the top of the program anyway. All the best. Let's hope the Stars kick back.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hilton Cartwright, Melbourne Stars. Chris Anstey, the big man from Brighton, joins us after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. This, Jimmy, is the final word for Fujitsu. Experience year-round comfort with Fujitsu, Australia's favourite air. And you're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, we know that the NBA was a big story today with James Harden traded from the Rockets to the Nets. But let's find out what's happening in the NBL, because that's not far away from kicking it off. And our number one correspondent in all matters basketball happens to be a neighbour of mine. Chris Anstey joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Chris. The cheque will be in the mail, by the way.
No, of course it will. No, thanks for having me. But you're right to start off. Just an incredibly busy day in the NBA today, and a lot of people knew it was coming, but the magnitude of those trades is going to be very, very interesting over the next couple of weeks to see how those Brooklyn Nets look. But no, you're right. It's exciting that the NBL is starting. There's been so much uncertainty. You know, the way we finished last year's championship series, where they abbreviated the final series and handed it to Perth in a best-of-three-game series instead of best-of-five. And we just weren't sure the season was going to get going, having such an early start date. But
before we get back into the NBA, just take us through this James Harden issue where he wanted a trade. They wouldn't trade him, so he went into a press conference and sledged his teammates so unmercifully... That's the wrong word, but you know what I mean. The next day, they trade him. I mean, the issue is, okay, that's a one-off, but do you think that it may become a practice that he's followed?
Well, it's really interesting that I really don't like it. And it's one of the differences between Australian and American professional sporting culture in my experience a long time over there. It's just so much more individual over there. And if there's a talented individual that wants something or he's not getting his own way, he's got a platform to be able to make things change. And, you know, from coaching changes to clearly today, the ability to get traded. And, you know, James Harden, he'd come back overweight. He'd come back and broken COVID restrictions blatantly. And that was the final straw, was just absolutely ripping his teammates to shreds. And the interesting part, of course, now being is that he joins Kyrie Irving, who's been probably the other poster child for the NBA through COVID with his, and over the last couple of years as well, with his lack of appreciation for teammates and his selfishness. And yeah, you don't find too many teammates looking to play with these two guys. So it's going to be fascinating. And in fact, Kyrie Irving's taken, you know, leave without explanation from the team in and around the US political scene. So nobody really knows what's happening. But, yeah, probably if we dug a little bit deeper, it was an interesting day for Ben Simmons, because by all reports, the Houston Rockets had agreed with a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, which would have sent Ben Simmons and a couple of young players to Houston. And in fact, the 76ers had in fact told Ben that he was getting traded. And, you know, right at the last minute, Brooklyn came in over the top. And so I guess then the club goes back to Ben and says, look, we're not really trading you. It didn't happen. But just for Ben to know that he was extendable as well, it'll be interesting to see how he performs. But, no, look, the biggest story out of all the trades is clearly, let's see what Kevin Durant, James Harden and Kyrie Irving look like on the same court if they get there, because it could be incredible or it could be a train wreck. We're just, you know, equally likely to be either one, I think.
Okay, let's get stuck into the NBL. We'll focus on Melbourne tonight. They kick off their season tomorrow night against the Adelaide 36ers. What have you made of their recruits, and how far do you think they can go this season, Chris?
Well, they're the most talented team in the league, as they are most years, and a little bit the same. It's going to come down to how well that Coach Dean Vickerman's able to get the talent working together. And the biggest name that's come back into the league this year is Jock Landale. And for those, and a lot of basketball people in Australia wouldn't have followed his career through college and into Europe, but he's an exceptional talent. He's a big guy who shoots the three, can play on the block. He's young and agile, and in all likelihood, he's the boomers man if and when the teams roll around. So I look forward to watching him. But as much as anyone, I think their opponent, and I was fortunate to coach young Josh Giddey, who's Melbourne Tigers legend Warwick Giddey's son.
Yep.
He is going to be something special. And yeah, we watched LaMelo Ball come through the NBL and get drafted third into the NBA this year. And Josh Giddey is very, very similar to LaMelo Ball. He's as good a passer as I've seen since Darryl McDonald. He's a 6'8" point guard who just has that real competitive streak about him. You know, he's developing his jump shot, so he gets an absolute asset test round one. He's up against Melbourne United. I look forward to watching both those two guys. But look, at the end of the day, as we said in the NBA, that the talent of Melbourne United is going to win them a lot of games.
Great to have you on board, Chris. Hopefully catch up with you in the Garden of Eden for a beer tomorrow night with Rosie.
sounds like a good plan.
Chris Anstey, one of the greats of Australian basketball, and that was the final word for Fujitsu. Experience year-round comfort, Jimmy, with Fujitsu, Australia's favourite air. That wraps up the program for tonight. As always, it's brought to you by Sports Day for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy, and of course, Kia with the best 7-year car warranty. And before we go, Jimmy, can I just mention that my niece, Danielle Pelly, just texted me to remind everybody that Ina Pelly, which is a major brand, gentlemen, the girls that already know about it, have got a 70% off online warehouse sale that kicks off at 6 o'clock today. So it's already been going for an hour. A 70% off online warehouse sale. Past season stocks, getting quick, sells fast. It's great gear. You would all have heard about it. And if you haven't, you're missing out. That's it for tonight. We'll speak to you 6 o'clock tomorrow. Welcome back to Sports Day. This is, as always, for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. And if you're home, you're going to get all the latest in sport. It's all for Vic Emergency. Being prepared for fire could save your life. You can download the Vic Emergency app at emergency.vic.gov.au. As always, we'll have the MRP evaluation on each and every one of these highlights from our good mate Jimmy Bartel. They can either be high, medium, or low impact. Will Pekoski to kick us off, Jimmy. He's been ruled out of the fourth test. I'm a bit surprised at that. My diagnosis was he'd play. But the good news is Marcus Harris, fellow Victorian, he gets his spot. How do you rate that one?
Medium, nearly high, but I was with you. I thought he was going to play. Even Justin Langer said as long as he can bat and catch, he would have been fine. But there must be something more to it. But medium because he's gone through so much to get his test spot.
Yeah,
we saw a glimpse of it in the first innings, why the wraps were so high. Then we probably won't see him for a while. Hopefully, he's good for the Ashes.
Indeed. But if he's missing one, I mean, I doubt whether they're going to operate on it. It's only subluxed, but you can never tell. Maybe he's got a huge tear in his labrum and they think he's only a young bloke. He needs to be able to throw, etc. So we'll put a wait and see on that particular one, but it's rated a medium from Jay Bartel. This is an interesting one. Tennis Sangren, who was pretty spectacular at the Australian Open last year, he's bound for Melbourne after testing positive to COVID-19 twice in the last 2 months, including as recently on Monday. But the Australian government and Tennis Australia officials say he's okay, he can get on the plane. He may well be positive, but he's not infectious. He's just shedding the virus.
No, high impact. You don't come here even if you're positive, shedding, if you're growing a coat, getting your coat groomed. Whatever it may be, positive is positive, and you can stay away.
Yes, it's geez, Lisa.
You can't let him in.
Lisa, this afternoon, my wife, she said, "What do you think? Do you reckon we should be having the Australian Open?" I had to think long and hard. And I said, "Well, what about the football?" She said, "But the football's in Australia. We're not importing all these people." She's gone off in an editorial at lunchtime.
Oh, fantastic,
strong editorial. So you're going high with that one. That's the first high for the week. Jonathan Patton, we see a little a bit of this, unfortunately, being treated for mental health issues surrounding the crisis that he is in, being stood down from the club, and he's not in a good way at this stage.
No, the public pressure that's come around it, I think your last count, when I saw this come up, I saw how many articles they've done on it. There's probably been a dozen articles and talk about editorials and opinion pieces off the back of it. And what happens when you get yourself in trouble, they use your photo and they reference you. So, hopefully he's on the mend. He's also got to go through the integrity office there at the AFL and Hawthorn included as well. So he'll get through it and deal with whatever punishment comes his way.
How'd you rate it?
I did a high because I don't like seeing people unwell.
That's a high. Alex Diminar. Now, he's warmed up for the Aussie Open with an ATP title on Wednesday, winning the Antalya Open in Turkey. Probably not overly a lot of points for that, but a win is a win. Fellow finalist Alexander Bublik, he retired with an ankle injury after just 7 minutes of play. So it was sort of like a walkover win.
Yeah, but the fact that he got to another final, I think that's 8 finals now. He's been in the last 8 tournaments. So it's high because we always love to jump on an Aussie. It's normally Ash Barty before that, Leighton Hewitt. So we hope that Alex Diminar runs into the quarterfinals, semifinals of the Oz Open.
So it's going to be interesting just to see if he can elevate himself to be a top 10 player, to be a slam. I mean, you can be a top 10 player as Ferrer was for a long time. He was rated 5, but he was never, ever going to win a slam.
Well, there's almost tears, isn't it? Like, I know the ratings there, but there's the big boys, the top four, or top three, really, Federer, Djokovic, Nadal. And then you've got...
Was Murray, but he's no longer.
And then you've got sort of Zverev, Stan Wawrinka, that sort of group. And then you've got this...
Team.
Yeah. And then you've got this sort of group between 10 and 20 who they're almost like professional quarterfinalists, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. And that's the spot where he's at. I mean, I think he's done well to elevate himself to that particular level. Hasn't got huge weapons, but has got great tenacity and he does a lot of things well. But the big difference between winning B-grade events and actually elevating and winning a slam is a huge gulf in sport, massive gulf in sport. Coming into the Australian Open, who do you like? Outside of the obvious.
Well, Wawrinka normally always plays well here. Mm-hmm. And I always love watching someone with a single hand backhand.
Yes, yep.
Who else?
Dominic Thiem is mine.
I remember doing a show with you about 2 years ago and you were on him. Yeah. So you've been on him for, you bought stock low.
I did. No Iron Thiem. We've all jumped on.
Yes. Yeah. You've been a big advocate for him.
He's now a slam winner. He was a runner-up in Australia last year.
He's broken the back of it.
He has broken it. And I reckon this time in, like, he's rock hard fit. This time in, it's going to be who is the fittest and who's done the preparation. Now, I know he's got himself a new love in his life. I think Lilia.
Straighten him up, has it?
He's happy. I reckon he's happy and he's fit. He's a confident guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if I'd be staggered if he doesn't play semi-finals.
Good headspace. When athletes, they always perform well if everything's going well.
We'll have to get Peter Johnson on to give us his crystal ball. Get him off the fence for the first time in his life and tell us a month out who's going to win. Now, this is a very interesting story. We'll come back to Bernard. I think that's just low. Is Bernard Tomic's qualified for the Australian Open? That's a tick. He beat JP Smith in four sets. So well done to Bernard. We've given him a few runs this week, but he has got there. So we'll give that a low. And hopefully if he can get to a second week, then it becomes a medium. And if he gets to the last two rounds, then it's a high. But this is the big one. NBA superstar James Harden. He's forced a trade. He's been looking for a trade for a long time, Jimmy, and he said, well, if you're not going to give me one, I'll get myself one by my own hand. He walked into a press conference and he totally teed off on his teammates. 24 hours later, he was traded.
Yep, enough was enough. Now, Houston, we're going to hold him to it because he's one of the greatest scorers of all time. Mm. Like, his numbers are extraordinary. He's a one-man game. But he's had enough of Houston and what they're doing around him. And like you said, he tried to agitate. He, you know, broke COVID rules. He's put on a heap of weight.
Does he?
But he still comes out and drops 40 points. Mm. They weren't going to trade him. So he goes, expedite this. I'll just start ripping teammates at all the post-match. Today, big trade. He's gone to the Brooklyn Nets, who have already got two absolute superstars already there. Houston Rockets, Cleveland Cavaliers are involved in the trade.
So what does that mean for the Houston Rockets? Does that elevate them to title potential?
No. No, they're... Yeah, if you're using the AFL terms, and they've even got an eight as well. They're the bottom half of the eight.
Okay. Well, I'm giving that a what?
It's probably a medium for basketball fans, low for sports fans.
Mm. I'm giving you a high for the magnificent use of the word expedite.
I liked it.
I enjoyed it. It was the first time expedite has been used on the program this year. This is Sports Day. Aussie tennis player Tristan Skilcate. He'll join us after this. And Peter Johnson joins us with the news that I think has taken a few people aback, Jimmy, that Premier Andrews today said basically the reason we're having the Grand Slam, the Australian Open this year, is because if we don't, we're at threat of losing it, which I think has taken a few people by surprise.
Yeah, there'll be some annoyed other sporting bodies that's the reason why it was going ahead, because they'd be saying, well, our sport could be lost or we could lose a touring party or whatever it may be, not the health reason that's been thrown at us.
I'm not sure how we can lose it, though. But anyway, let's find out from someone who would know. Peter Johnson joins us on the line, a man who used to run men's tennis and was walking the powers, the halls of power at Tennis Australia. He will know more about this than most. He joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Jono. Were you taken aback by what the Premier had to say today?
Well, Joe, look, I know for sure that the Australian Open as a business has to do what it has to do to keep the continuity and keep going ahead. I'm sure that's the reason they're pressed on. But they don't actually, it's sort of, the way it works is it's an asset owned by Tennis Australia. So it would be really Tennis Australia's to lose as such. Like, they could sell it to wherever. You know, there's a lot of countries would love to have the Grand Slam event, but it's really not something that gets taken away from you by any governing body. I mean, the Grand Slams are a sort of an alliance of the four, the French, Wimbledon and US Open, but they're independent entities that are owned. And, you know, I like, say, for example, Wimbledon wasn't played last year, but it didn't mean that Wimbledon was lost.
Yeah.
They just sat off and they're back on. So I think that's sort of not really correct. It's really in Tennis Australia's hands to decide the status of the Australian Open. Now, if the Australian Open over the next course of years continued to be a falling star, for example, and couldn't keep up the pace on prize money and all those sorts of things, well, then maybe the other slams and the tours would question its status. But, I mean, it's a glowing event in the on the global tennis stage. So you'd be a long way from ever getting the status taken off you, I can tell you that.
I think it probably points, though, to the heat that the government is actually now feeling. I mean, there is a fair swell of discontent or even anger, if you like, that the Tennis Australia is pursuing or continuing to go ahead with the Australian Open. And the issue of Tennis Sengren, a guy who's, you know, tested positive, but from all reports, not contagious, is still coming out to Australia with a second positive test, I think is inflaming what is a relatively volatile situation for the government to handle.
Well, it's always going to be tricky when it is against the grain of, you know, limiting the number of people coming into the country and even Australians coming back, and then suddenly there's the influx of the tennis players. I guess I've always said, and we've discussed this before, I think tennis has to do its best to try and stay on, and it's ultimately the government who's the ultimate arbiter in terms of can you do this and can you do that. And I've only been following the Tennis Sengren one through the media the last few hours, and clearly it had to go through a process. I mean, no one's let him on a plane without getting a tick from the health authorities here. So, but it's going to be constant management over the next period of time once the players hit town, the daily management of quarantine, etc. And it's going to be a road that I'm sure is going to have a lot of twists and turns. And I think every time it's going to be a lot about just how you manage what is a really tricky situation.
Pete, further to that, to borrow the AFL term, the optics, do you think the big-name tennis players understand, I guess, the uneasiness or nervousness of the general public with them coming out when they see early in the year the likes of Novak, Zverev and all that just partying up in Europe during the midst of COVID?
I do think so, Jimmy. I think they have lived through now almost... Well, first of all, they had about 6 months where there was no play, so they had to live with that. And then in the resumption of play with the French, US Open, sorry, and then the French and a swag of ATP events and only a couple of WTA events, they've had to really live through the public or each country that they've played in, where there's been, in many cases, massive number of cases in that country and the controls that governments have put on in each country. So I think they're well and truly aware. I think there's an element of relief of players, like they are trusting of Australia and even getting on the plane. Though they've got to do the 2 week quarantine, I think they're happy enough to come to Australia because they know there's a fair bit to play for. There's more than one tournament. And also they're leaving, in most cases, countries that do have extensive cases of COVID. So overall, I think there's a general sort of almost feeling of looking forward to coming to Australia. And I think we'll see that when they arrive.
Just going back to the original issue, John, I've always been of the view that just thought it was on the money that Australia could lose the Australian Open and the Slam status to someone like China, who clearly they don't want our lobsters, they don't want our cherries, but I'll tell you what, they'd like our tennis tournament. I thought it was just a matter of, okay, you've got to stay politically sweet. But you're actually saying, well, that's absolutely nonsense. As long as we maintain the status by prize money, it's going nowhere. It begs the question why the Premier would think it's the case, because surely he'd be talking to Craig Tiley and the powers that be at Tennis Australia.
Well, the part that everyone in Australia understands is you've got to keep up your game or you probably become vulnerable. But the reality in simple terms is it's an asset that's owned by Tennis Australia. And look, I know I deal a lot with China and other countries, and boy, they, as you said, they do anything they could to try and get a slam, but they're kind of, they're not sitting on the shelf for sale because the slams are performing well themselves. And I think it's only when a when it's not performing, just like any other asset, that that any owner would look to unload it. So in that sense, it's always had its protection. But yeah, look, the Australian Open's done just an incredible job over the years to keep growing and keep maximising. Yep. And I think that's part of the positioning of Grand Slam Asia Pacific, isn't it? Like, you've got to grow the market that you're part of because Australia's small. And, you know, there've been the cleverness in trying to keep the Australian Open at a level of being a premier Grand Slam.
So just to tick off on the day's news on the court, and that, of course, is that Bernard Tomic got his way through, which he should do given the level of talent he's got, but he had to do it, and he has.
Yeah, and Jerry, look, I do really take my hat off to Bernie, that he what he did was he knew he had to, you know, we've talked about it, it's been difficult for all the players to have to go and to Dubai and Doha and know that also when they come back, they have to quarantine. It's been a lot they've had to manage. And I think he's embraced it in a very positive way.
Yep.
And, you know, he's had some, he's played on some of the biggest stages in the world, but he's, in this case, he's had to pick up the balls in some cases, and he's played in front of no one, and he's found a way. He's played a couple of Aussies that actually, you know, you never really like to play an Aussie, probably when you've been the one who's the big guy, and those guys, it would be a kind of a bad loss in his eyes if he lost to them. So he's had to contend with a lot, and good on him for, you know, getting through. And I think he'd be pretty happy with himself to have got through.
Pete, further that, when he first came on the scene, he was projected out to be a challenger for the, you know, the top 10, top 20. Now that we've seen enough of him, I know he's had his ups and downs, he's been in and out of the game and all sorts of stuff. Is that projection still right, or is he going to always peak out at a best of 30 or 40 in the world?
Well, Jimmy, I think he did have some pretty amazing years. He got to 17 in the world. His Davis Cup record always underrated, but it was 14-2. You know, pretty good at representing Australia in the years that he did, and a couple of quarterfinals in slams. I think what he's really at now is identifying that he still wants to stay in the game. You know, I think he's demonstrated that by paying his dues, going to qualies. And I think he's just in a rebuild and probably trying to get as far as he can. You know, he always still has to work hard. He sort of openly admits that he sometimes doesn't work hard enough. And look, I think he's just probably trying to grind out the next stage of his career to really put the icing on it. He's 28 years old now. He certainly knows what's required. But I think that's where he's probably at a stage of trying to consolidate his regular spot in the main tour.
Well, I think the whole world's offered him some advice on how to do it and why he should do it. Seems to me like he's finally listened to his accountant. Jono, great to have you on board. Next time we speak, we want a winner and of both men and women in the Australian Open.
Well, I'll work on that one, Joe. That's my homework.
Indeed it is. And you can't take no iron team because he's already been taken. There was Peter Johnson. He joined us for Club Mandalay, the must-play golf course in Melbourne's north. More Sports Day still ahead. And it's all for Wilson Homes. Chris Anstey to join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It's Jared Healy and Jimmy Bartel with you tonight. And earlier in the night, we chatted to the Giants captain, Steve Cornelio, who had an up-and-down year last year, a lot of down, and he's looking for a lot of up this time round. Here's some of what he had to say.
No, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And, thanks for having me on.
Do you reckon we should be having the Australian Open, given the set of circumstances?
I'm not too sure. I play tennis, but in terms of how fondly I watch it, I can't say. I do watch it at the Oz Open, of course, and like to attend it, but in terms of the politics of it, I'm not too sure.
Well, your AFLW team has had to keep shifting bases because of COVID. They're in Albury. Now they've had to quickly rush across to Adelaide.
Yes, it's COVID, really, isn't it? We've never really experienced this like in sport, you know, across the world, really ever, where there's, you know, hub type of situations. And unfortunately for the AFL, you know, W girls who, you know, it's tough for a lot of them for a number of reasons, not only personally, but, you know, professionally with trying to balance, you know, AFL and other work. It's, you know, certainly a tough time. So we're definitely sparing a thought for them as well.
Wherever I go, Stephen, I get big raps about you as a person, and we know what you do on the field. Tim Jepp, who's known you since you're a boy over in Western Australia, continually gives you a major rap. But you found yourself in a bit of a hole last year, a big hole. You were the focus of the whole competition for a period of time, which must have been difficult to deal with, and certainly puts a bit of a target on your head coming into 2021. How have you dealt with all of that?
Yeah, no doubt, Jared. It was a difficult year for myself, and one I probably haven't had in my career before. Of course, I've had some downs over the time, but last year, looking over my career, it was a really difficult time, and I've just been taking the last few months really just to reflect on what it is that got the better of our team and what got the better of me and how I can change that and come back a better player. And like I said, I've been fortunate enough over my career to have some really good ups and evolve as a player, and the type of player and more importantly the leader I want to be for our football club. I want guys to be able to see me rise from challenges like the ones of 2020 and be an example of how we can turn it around as a team and as a club.
So when you did your reflection, where did you feel you made an error? And were you at all bitter at all at various stages that you've dealt with about getting dropped? I mean, it must have been a year of great reflection, or post-season of great reflection, as to how you kickstart this season on a positive note.
Yeah, I think, for me, I was fortunate enough to be vice-captain for, a number of is under Phil and Cal, and I don't know. I probably just tried to, think about, changing too many things. Spoke to someone, during the back end of the year as to, what you. I know it was different because of the hub situation, yep. Playing games, every 4 or 5 days. But really getting a Monday to Wednesday, and then separating that from Thursday to Saturday in terms of the conversations that need to be had with staff, or the time management piece, getting that out of the way earlier in the week, and really having that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to focus on your what you bring to the team, your performance, and I was probably just thinking too many things. I think, Jared, it was a few things that I had on my plate that I probably could have cut out of my schedule, and I think time management was a big one for sure, and I couldn't get a kick, which obviously didn't help the on field stuff, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was just a number of things, and they're probably the main ones.
Talking to a few people around the club, Cogs, they're all pretty excited about the opportunity and the potential of the forward group and forward of the ball. Jez Cameron leaves, but fit Toby Green this year. Jesse Hogan comes in looking to really reignite his career. The emergence of Riccardi. A lot of talent still in the front half.
Yeah, I think that's one of the blessings of a couple of guys choosing to move on. There's a number of guys there that the competition's only probably just seen glimpses of, and Riccardi's probably one of those. Everyone's obviously seen how good Jesse can be when he's on, and we're definitely working really hard to make sure that he can physically and mentally perform for the Giants and get back to what he was doing best. It's just really exciting at the moment to see so many young guys actually, see a path. I think, for a long time, a lot of our younger players probably, have either been drafted to the club, and yes, they work hard, and yes, they're getting better, but there's guys like Jeremy, Zach Williams in front of them, Aiden Corr in front of them, and now they actually can see a real path and have come in an attitude where, they want to be the name getting, called out in that position come round one.
And a teammate of both of ours and now a coach, he was a bit of a mad scientist when I played with him, but he's in charge of a lot of that stuff in Steve Johnson now, back at the Giants as a coach.
Yeah, he is. I actually, obviously as a played with him for a number of years and I forgot his kicking ability and got one in the back of the head yesterday because he was doing a couple of those no-look kicks and a few terminologies. changes that he's had already since he's been there. And there was one, I guess, drill or play in particular called the J curve that wasn't a snap at all. It had nothing to do with a snap, which he thinks he created. So there's been a number of terminology had to, you know, been altered or changed to make sure Stevie's happy with it.
Has he been focusing on ball movement? Because a lot of people, when they watched the Giants last year, thought when you lost, it was the ball movement from the back half that cost you in some games. Has that been a big focus for him?
Yeah. I think that forward line will grow. Having someone like him with his expertise, I think also, you know, a ball movement and some of the ideas, I guess people that are fortunate enough to obviously know him and know how well he knows the game. I think, you know, obviously he was a fantastic player, both skill-wise and what he achieved in the game, but as a coach and what he brings with his knowledge, ideas, but his hands-on approach, I think, is just one of the great assets that we've been able to access and get full time this year. I think we, you know, definitely miss him around the organization, and we're fortunate to have him on board. And I know a lot of guys, you know, grew up watching him play, and to be able to work with him and see how he, you know, interacts with players is just phenomenal.
I ran into Jesse Hogan. I used to go surfing with him a little bit in Paddington a couple of weeks before Christmas. He looks in a pretty good space, and he's a bit like, in some ways, the Giants themselves. A little bit unfulfilled. A lot of people have written him and you off, and yet get things right, and the dream still is there.
Yeah, I'm definitely unfulfilled, Jared, in terms of, you know, we still get to win anything, really, and you know, in terms of hunger and desire, especially after a year like 2020, both, you know, personally and collectively, as a footy club, we're, you know, well, you know, capable of being right up there again this year. It's just about, you know, what we're going to do about it, and you know, the work obviously has started for us, and a lot for the first and 4 years before Christmas, but. You know, a really good feel about the place at the moment, but yeah, very much unfulfilled and, you know, to be continued.
So do you have much to do with Jesse as captain? I mean, clearly he is a pivotal part, even though, you know, a bit of a free hit. You got him for bugger all in reality, and he's a super talent. But do you have a bit of an extra handle on where he's at, given that he's had some issues, but he's so important for your future and the team's future?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was fortunate enough to, Chris, to spend a bit of time with him, do some training sessions with him and some conversations. I think we're, you know, very fortunate. Like you said, in fact, you can lose someone like Jeremy and gain someone like Jesse with, you know, phenomenal talent and probably, like you were saying before, a little bit unfulfilled as to what he has left in the game and, you know, in conversations with him already. And, you know, guys like Toby and I know Shane Mumford in particular. You know, we're keeping him for the fact that loving it and we you know, want him and need him to be a, you know, key part of it. You know, so far he's loving what, you know, Sydney can, you know, provide for him and provide for the player.
And that was Stephen Canelio. Interesting dialogue between the most powerful man on the Giants board and the most powerful man on the Giants field. Having a chat together here on Sports Day. Plenty more to come straight after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. This, Jimmy, is the final word for Fujitsu. Experience year-round comfort with Fujitsu, Australia's favourite air. And you're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, we know that the NBA was a big story today with James Harden traded from the Rockets to the Nets. But let's find out what's happening in the NBL because that's not far away from kicking it off. And our number one correspondent in all matters basketball happens to be a neighbour of mine. Chris Anstey joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Chris. The cheque will be in the mail, by the way.
No, of course it will. Thanks for having me. You're right to start off. Just an incredibly busy day in the NBA today and... A lot of people knew it was coming, but the magnitude of those trades is going to be very, very interesting over the next couple of weeks to see how those Brooklyn Nets look. But No, you're right. It's exciting that the NBL's starting. There's been so much uncertainty. You know, the way we finished last year's championship series, where they abbreviated the final series and handed it to Perth in a best-of-three-game series instead of best-of-five. And we just weren't sure the season was going to get going, having such an early start date. But it's ready to go. There you know, some incredible talents come back to the league. The imports are back, and it's a little bit surreal. It's really nice to have men's basketball back.
Before we get back into the NBL, just take us through this James Harden issue where he wanted to trade. They wouldn't trade him, so he went into a press conference and sledged his teammates so unmercifully, that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean. The next day, they trade him. I mean, the issue is, okay, that's a one-off, but do you think that it may become a practice that is followed?
Well, it's really interesting that I really don't like it, and it's one of the differences between Australian and American professional sporting culture in my experience. A long time over there, it's just so much more individual over there. And if there's a talented individual that wants something or he's not getting his own way, he's got a platform to be able to make things change. And, you know, from coaching changes to clearly today, the ability to get traded. And, you know, James Harden, he'd come back overweight. He'd come back and broken COVID restrictions blatantly. And that was the final straw, was just absolutely ripping his teammates to shreds. And the interesting part, of course, now being is that he joins Kyrie Irving, who's been probably the other poster child for the NBA through COVID with his, and over the last couple of years as well, with his lack of appreciation for teammates and his selfishness. And yeah, you don't find too many teammates looking to play with these two guys. So it's going to be fascinating. And in fact, Kyrie Irving's taken, you know, leave without explanation from the team in and around the US political scene. So nobody really knows what's happening. But, yeah, probably if we dug a little bit deeper, it was an interesting day for Ben Simmons, because by all reports, the Houston Rockets had agreed with a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, which would have sent Ben Simmons and a couple of young players to Houston. And in fact, the 76ers had in fact told Ben that he was getting traded. And, you know, right at the last minute, Brooklyn came in over the top. And so I guess then the club goes back to Ben and says, look, we're not really trading you. It didn't happen, but just for Ben to know that he was extendable as well. It'll be interesting to see how he performs. But the biggest story out of all the trades is clearly, let's see what Kevin Durant, James Harden and Kyrie Irving look like on the same court if they get there, because it could be incredible or it could be a train wreck. We just, you know, equally likely to be either one, I think.
Well, Chris, let's unpack that a little bit. All sports, you try and load your side with all the superstars, but we know with basketball, you can almost have too many at different times. You already highlighted there's only one ball and all three of these guys, you probably want having the bulk of your shots. How's it going to even work?
You've summarised it beautifully, that those three guys are probably three of the most ball-dominant players in the NBA, meaning that they're extraordinarily talented with the ball in their hands but provide very little when they don't. Of course, in any game of basketball, there's plenty of movement, screening, cutting, you know, to create open shots for teammates when you don't have the ball. But those three guys certainly don't, you know, excel at that area of the game. So I see a lot of standing around for the Brooklyn Nets and watching one of those three go to work. And I feel, you know, at some level for the other nine guys on the team, and I wonder what their experience will be like, because their opportunities will reduce even further. So, again, there are a lot of egos in an NBA locker room. And the Brooklyn Nets now have the most egos, and probably, again, another little one for me is an old teammate of mine, Steve Nash, is a rookie coach, and he's got the job of keeping their egos in check and you know, providing a basketball environment that those three want to be a part of. So it's just going to be so volatile. I'm fascinated to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be popcorn viewing. But another little aspect of the trade, Melbourne's own Dante Exum, he was just starting to find his feet at Cleveland after all the injuries, and he was in the starting five, but he's been linked into this deal. He's now at the Houston Rockets. Mm. Is this good for him?
Yeah, he is. Well, I don't know, because as you say, he was cheating and popped his Achilles only a couple of weeks ago, so we don't know how long he's out for again. And unfortunately, Dante's just never had a real good run at an extended period of basketball in the NBA. I mean, we know his talent, but, you know, this becomes what, maybe his fourth or fifth club now, and he hasn't established himself at either or at any of them. So I fear for where his NBA career lies. You know, he just hasn't had the chance to prove himself. And, you know, being so injury-prone and turning up to the Houston Rockets without the ability to play, you know, I'm not sure how they value him. I hope they do, but, you know, it might be... I don't think it's going to be good news for Dante as much as I hope it will be.
Okay, let's get stuck into the NBL. We'll focus on Melbourne tonight. They kick off their season tomorrow night against the Adelaide 36ers. What have you made of their recruits, and how far do you think they can go this season, Chris?
Well, they're the most talented team in the league, as they are most years, and a little bit the same. It's going to come down to how well that Coach Dean Vickerman's able to get the talent working together. And the biggest name that's come back into the league this year is Jock Landale. And for those, and a lot of basketball people in Australia wouldn't have followed his career through college and into Europe, but he's an exceptional talent. He's a big guy who shoots the three, can play on the block. He's young and agile, and in all likelihood, he's the boom starting foreman if and when the Olympics roll around. So I look forward to watching him. But as much as anyone, I think their opponent, and I was fortunate to coach young Josh Giddey, who's Melbourne Tigers legend Warwick Giddey's son.
Yep.
He is going to be something special. And, you know, we watched LaMelo Ball come through the NBL and get drafted third into the NBA this year. And Josh Giddey is very, very similar to LaMelo Ball. He's as good a passer as I've seen since Darryl McDonald. He's a 6'8" point guard who just has that real competitive streak about him. You know, he's developing his jump shot. So he gets an absolute asset test round one. He's up against Melbourne United. I look forward to watching both those two guys. But look, at the end of the day, as we said in the NBA, the talent of Melbourne United is going to win them a lot of games, and they'll play finals. It's whether or not they can finish off the season with a championship. The championship, I think, is going to be the main question.
Well, probably their biggest opponent and one of the most undersold things in Australian sport is the Perth Wildcats. 30 consecutive years, pretty much, they're at finishing in the finals. It's ridiculous how consistently great they've been.
It's just a credit to the program, and you're right. We understand it in basketball circles, and, you know, as a sport, we don't feel like it's been highlighted enough, because to do that's just incredible. And, you know, we take on board that there have been years where there aren't as many teams in the competition as there are other sports, but you've still got to finish in the top few. So they've been incredible. They lose Damian Martin, who's probably the last genuine star from the last era. You know, he was the heart and soul of that club. So they've got a little bit of work to do, but Bryce Cotton, MVP of the league last year, the most dynamic scorer in the league for me. Yeah, he'll win games by himself, but you'd see them playing finals again. I mean, how do you pick against a team that's made 30 in a row to miss the finals? But I suppose on the flip side of that, you know, another team that I do want to mention is Illawarra. Well, they're not actually Illawarra anymore; they're just the Hawks. But legendary coach Brian Gorgian's back. He's got some incredible young talent, some length, some athleticism, and not many people pick them to play finals, but I would be very, very surprised if they don't. And I just think they're going to be one of the most exciting teams to watch this season as well. So a lot of storylines and a lot of things to watch when the NBL tips off tomorrow night.
I like that one. Keep your eye on the Hawks with Brian Gorgian back in the throng. Great to have you on board, Chris. Hopefully catch up with you in the Garden of Eden for a beer tomorrow night with Rosie.
Sounds like a good plan.